Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw. He's Alex Wolf. And as I make my return, the New York Knicks return to sucking a 97-87 loss to the Charlotte Hornets. Alex, what are we going to get into?
Quite frankly, I blame you completely for the Knicks bad again, Gavin. I'm sending you off to a new high school basketball tournament. At any rate, we're going to talk about Mitchell Robinson, who busted out one of the more intriguing and advanced moves that we've seen from him in this game, with a great drive from the perimeter for a dunk in this game. So we're going to talk about, like, where our expectations lie with Mitch now, and harken back to an old play similar to that we always used to kind of hold as the stretch goal for Mitch. We're also going to talk about whether the Knicks need more penetrating guards to sort of break up these zone defense, since they were once again vexed by the Hornets in this game. So we're going to talk about that, what they could do to remedy that situation. And then we're just going to kind of get into the rest, you know, talk about the rest of the players, maybe get a quick take on the Reddish deal from Gavin, just a little mishmash of things to end the show. But that's all coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now. Tucks left, now fires a three,
he's good, and he's fouled, it's tough, and he makes it out.
Anthony for three, bang, that one goes down.
This is all about, back up off the glass, it's good, RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious. Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. We want to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. We are now available on all platforms, including on YouTube. We recently, and by we, I mean just Alex and a couple of fantastic Hawks and analysts, had a video blow up on YouTube, so you should check that out. It was the episode on the Cam Reddish trade, if you haven't already. And please throw us a subscription, because we're getting so close to 1,000, only about 300 of you away. And I know at least 300 of you listen, because I check. Anyways, I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster, literally fresh off a trip to Springfield, Massachusetts, to broadcast the Hoopall Classic. A lot of fun there. He is Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the Strickland, the best Knicks website out there, period. No question, no debate. And we are going to get into a not-so-fun game, but there was a fun moment, Alex.
Yeah, well, first off, did you see, like, the next Nick of the future? Did you see, like, someone who's going to be in a Knicks uniform in a couple years? What do you think?
I did.
I think you saw a Kentucky kid, and that means he's got to be a Nick in, like, 2 years, right?
I saw a couple of Kentucky kids. This guy, if I'm remembering correctly, there were a lot of players, a lot of names. I'm pretty sure Chris Livingston was his name, Oak Hill Academy, like 6'8", small forward, can shoot, can run, athletic. Also, shout out to Darren Ames, this point guard out of Kenwood Academy in Chicago, like best handles I've ever seen on a high school kid. Everyone should check him out on YouTube. But right now, Alex, we're going to talk about Mitchell Robinson a little bit, because he had himself a fantastic moment dribbling the basketball in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mitch ends up with 10.6 boards, a block, a steal in this game, 4-6 from the field. So, you know, not his most robust outing that he's had recently as far as, you know, statistics go. But as far as a wow moment goes, he definitely had his best wow moment in a while. He, gets the ball off an inbounds. He has Mason Plumlee. I always screw up the Plumlees. Mason's the one that is currently on the – all right, yeah, Mason Plumlee guarding him. And sees an opening and just toasts him and gets to the hoop and throws it down. And it was just, I mean, not something that we were expecting out of Mitch at all. And you couldn't see his eyes on the broadcast because his back was to the camera. But if you were in front of him, I swear you could have seen his eyes light up, you know, when he sees this driving lane, like Plumlee was just asleep on him, shading way too much to his right for whatever reason. And Mitch was just kind of like, well, I think I'm capable of doing this. And he managed to, you know, get inside. He made a nice little kind of, it wasn't like a Euro, but, you know, he made a nice transition, you know, from hand to hand and went up for a dunk. And it was a gorgeous play and really reminiscent. Gavin, I was racking my brain all day and I could not find this play. And, I tried looking for it on NBA stats, but it looks like some of their videos from past seasons are just not working at the moment. So I couldn't find the exact game. But there was a moment that for like literally a year, you and I went back to, we went back to this well, like every single time that we would talk about what Mitch's ceiling was going to be. And it was mostly during when there was a talk about like, oh, is Mitch going to add a 3-point shot? And we were like, you know, I don't really think he needs that, but it would be really nice if he could replicate that one move that we saw in that one game against whatever opponent it was. I totally couldn't find it. And it was very frustrating today, but he had this one moment where he had the ball at the top of the 3-point line, like 2 years ago, or maybe even his rookie year. And he just kind of saw that same thing, a little opening from his defender, put it on the floor, like 2-3 dribbles and threw it down on the inside. And it was like one of the most beautiful things you'd ever want to see, because that's like a legitimate like game breaking skill for him. So it gave me like flashbacks to that. And I thought it would be kind of fun to like, rather than immediately dive in to this game, which was just generally not very fun. The Knicks looked very sluggish. It was like a traditional Knicks afternoon game. I thought maybe it could be kind of fun to like pick out what we think, if we want to put this in terms of like a Kickstarter project, like what Mitch's stretch goal is right now. Like, what should be the thing that we should think of, you know, now that he's kind of getting back to his old self as far as, you know, rebounding the ball and finishing lobs and finishing strong inside, all that good stuff that we come to expect from him. Is this still like the ability to put it on the floor from the perimeter and occasionally toast somebody? Is that still the swing skill for him, you think, or is there something else that kind of comes to mind now?
I think for me, it's one dribble moves in general, and that could be from the perimeter. It could also be just, I mean, his ability to catch it on a post up and make like one dribble quick pivot into a little jump hook. And I think it's frustrating with Mitch, because we always see the summer videos of him putting together like double crossover behind the back, like step back 3-pointers and like stuff that like obviously looks cool, but we know he's never ever going to use in a game. And to me, like I some people get outraged by that stuff. I'm more like, all right, it doesn't mean that he isn't working on all the stuff that he should be working on, like just like the very basic post moves. Like this could just be like him screwing around and having fun and wanting to share it. But that being said, the issue with it is we've never seen that stuff from him. And for me, it's always been a question of like, is it because he never works on it, or is it because he can't do it? And like all NBA players like work on a million different skills. And generally the guys who I think last longer and have longer careers who are role players are the guys who are just like very, very specific in what they do. And the players who are like generalists and like work on all this stuff that they'll never, ever get to use in games, like that often comes back to bite you. And frankly, like we have no idea what Mitchell Robinson does in his free time. We don't really know what he does with the Knicks development staff outside of the fact that he put on a lot of muscle this year. But I would love to see him like continue to expand the ability to, again, just like pump and go closer to the rim and occasionally catch and attack a defender, because there's all this explosiveness there that gets used in one way but doesn't get used in any other way. And it's a waste, honestly, if he never really figures that out.
Yeah, I think I'm with you as far as just having any sort of moves that require dribbling. Like, I think, you know, if you could set up situations where he could get quick enough and, you know, use his explosiveness enough to get the ball in the post and just take like a quick, like one shoulder, you know, spin dribble, like a single dribble, and then just go up for a dunk when he's like 4 feet away from the hoop, I think he's going to convert a lot of those at this rate. You know, he's definitely got that hop back, and he's got the strength to sort of like free himself from his defender just with a simple turnaround. And he'll probably draw a lot of fouls that way too, which, you know, obviously that's a mixed bag. His free throw shooting has been, you know, up and down this year, but I think that would be something I'd be really interested in seeing. Also, I mean, maybe this is probably like Clyde's wish list for him based off how often he brings it up, but like, I really do think if Mitch could work out just a little baby hook, that would be a game changer for him, because then everything wouldn't always have to just be a strong finish at the rim. He could, you know, get it in a back down situation like that. And, you know, not even have to do too much work as far as like dribbling the ball out in front of it before putting up the baby hook. But if he just gets it, quick pivot and a little baby hook shot like that, it would be sort of like Robin Lopez when he was on the Knicks. You know, I think that was one of his most deadly weapons, and he learned it so perfect, where it was just like that little like push shot, you know, that he would shoot right up. But it was always, you know, he was always in basically the same spot, and it always went in the exact same way, you know, just like a perfect up and down into the basket. And he made like, I feel like it had to have been at least like 70% of those when he would take them when he was a Knick. It was like his signature shot. So that would definitely be something I'd be interested in with Mitch. But yeah, in general, I do think, you know, Mitch obviously does like working on that sort of stuff. And, you know, as we said, as you said already, you know, he got clowned for it before, you know, by people on social media or whatever for like, why are you working on crossing up non-NBA guys in an empty gym, you know, instead of, you know, working on X, Y, or Z. It's pretty obvious, you know. I mean, he works on the other stuff and he's very good at the defensive aspect. He's reeled in his fouling so much, and that's been so valuable to him this year now that he's, you know, back in shape and seems to be making an impact more. So, you know, I think that working on something little like that, just like a little baby hook or something, that might be an actual like game changer and might be that magical thing that gets him into that, you know, 14, 15 points a game conversation consistently. Between that and the lobs and just the putbacks and the strong finishes and all that right around the rim. So it, definitely that would be my goal for him. But Gavin, I'm going to let everybody know if their goal is to make a little money. I think maybe some people should check out Prize Picks. And Knicks fans, you've been hearing us tell you about Prize Picks for months. Have you signed up yet? If you haven't, now is the perfect time. For a limited time, Prize Picks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our users. Users get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point, but you must use code NBA. That's right. This is an exclusive offer available to Locked On fans only who use code NBA. Prize Picks has the most NBA DFS prop game, or the best NBA DFS prop game in the market, my apologies, and the most things that you could do with it, because it offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator and offers all the superstar players as well as bench players, only recording a handful of minutes each game. Prize Picks offers any prop you can think of, from points, assists, rebounds, threes made, etc. You pick 2 to 5 players and over under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus the projected numbers. Prize Picks also allows mixed sport entries, so you can take the over on Embiid, come out with the under on Rodgers in the same entry. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals. So go to prizepicks.com today or go to your App Store and download the app. All users that deposit and use our promo code NBA will get $50 free if your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. That's right. All users that deposit and use our promo code NBA will get $50 free if your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. All right, Gavin, so moving right along here, you know, one thing that we were in agreement with as far as this game when we were talking before the show is that the Knicks do not, or did not in this game, have enough dribble penetration to really punish the zone defense that the Hornets threw at the Knicks in this one. And as usual, you know, the going back to last season, the one thing that can truly vex this Knicks team is a zone defense. So what do you think as far as what the solution could be? Do you think it's as simple as like Kemba Walker and Derrick Rose coming back? Or do you think that, you know, the Knicks maybe need to look for an external candidate here at this point?
I don't know. I think you might have caught onto the solution there, Alex. Like a Dragon Ball Z style, like fusion dance between Kemba and D Rose could make a pretty deadly player.
Maybe a ligament and knee cartilage swap or something until we create the perfect mix of what's left of both their knees, I guess. I don't know.
I love like Mitch in the locker room, like thinking he just thought of a genius idea. He's like, Kemba, you need a knee. Derek, you need an ankle. Swap it.
Yeah. or just one gives it to the, I mean, who would you give to what then? You know, who do you want to have the perfectly?
Well, no, I think you do the surgery and then Mitch is like, wait a second. Now you just have his issue and you have his issue. We got to put them all in one person. Yeah. Maybe we give them both to Miles and we see how he does it. But yeah, I'm with you. And look, there's a number of ways to beat the zone, right? Like if you have lights out shooters, like that's going to break a zone. If you're really, really like cohesive, like passing the ball, moving off the ball, I'm like off a week of watching high school basketball where everyone plays zone, and like the teams that could beat it were the teams that were just like incredibly good at passing. But to me, like to some extent, like the best thing you could have is someone who can consistently break it by getting into the lane. And to me, that's all about attacking gaps. And that doesn't have to be ball handling, but for the Knicks, it feels like they need more guys with that juice because I think where I'm a little bit confused, and like this isn't answering your question directly, is that just because they're not connected enough to pass their way out of it. And I think it's a little bit of both things. Like, you need that connectivity, but you also just need to be able to win one-on-one when you draw that defender like into your general vicinity. And right now they're really lacking for that, because Kemba and D Rose are like two of the better guys, like obviously not their peaks in terms of their handle, but two of the better guys in recent NBA history at that capacity. But it does feel like on the wing, right, they're still lacking for that a little bit, even with RJ Barrett recently making an ascension in that capacity. Maybe it just stood out tonight because Alec Burks had a particularly poor game, but it feels like they could use more like dribbling juice on the perimeter. And I don't know if that means a star or if that just means a guy with like a good handle, but I'm sort of curious if that's something that they should target going forward.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I made the point pre-show. We feel like we're starting to go to the same well a lot, which happens a lot when you reach this point of the season. You know, we sort of know who most of the players on this team are at this point and what they could bring to the table. There are a few surprises left, you know, as far as that sort of thing. And so, you know, I don't want to like beat the dead horse here, but I do kind of wonder if, you know, obviously you don't have Rose at the moment. You don't have Walker at the moment. So could the solution just be to put Emmanuel Quickley in for Alec Burks in the starting lineup, at least as, you know, a solution in the near term here? Because I think that Alec Burks' skill set, I mean, we've seen it always tends to just work better for him off the bench, period. And that doesn't mean that he can't close games or something if he's playing well. You know, Tibbs clearly loves him, and, you know, if he's playing really well, he will reward him with closing minutes and stuff. So, you know, that shouldn't matter, but Burks just, I think that he's less likely to sort of be exposed for the lack of like creation and stuff that he has in certain games when, you know, he's not having to be the starting point guard for the team. Whereas Emmanuel Quickley, I mean, I thought in this game, particularly with the personnel he was playing with, which was off the bench, obviously, but mostly it was he and Obi Toppin, you know, had a really good chemistry in this game. And Quickley, I thought, was doing a good job of, he was able to break down the defense some, and he was able to get into the lane and collapse the defense. And a number of times found Obi Toppin like cutting back door for a dunk or, you know, whatever the case may be. And, you know, Obi managed to have a good game as a result too. So that kind of makes me wonder, like, you know, if you have Quickley out there with the starting lineup's actually been shooting quite well lately. Like, Randall's 3-point shot seems to be kind of coming back to him. RJ's definitely is. Fournier's definitely is. If you have those three out there, along with Quickley, who's no slouch shooting the three in his own right, and then have Mitchell Robinson, who then can be that guy that can be in the dunker spot and catch lobs from Emmanuel Quickley, or just be there. Like, the floater is a good shot for sort of like Kobe assist to Mitchell Robinson in many ways, because that creates a rebound that, you know, generally has a pretty high, you know, angle of exit. You know, I guess you would call that arc. You know, high arc coming off the rebound, which gives Mitch more time to set up, more time to plan how to get that rebound and, you know, set up position and then get a putback. I think there are a lot of possibilities that adding Quickley into the starting lineup right now adds that, you know, again, I feel like we're kind of a broken record here, but I think that could be a really worthwhile time investment for the Knicks right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Quickley is that he plays with urgency, right? And to me, that's like when this game got really frustrating it's frustrating the whole way, but particularly in the third quarter, it was because the Knicks just like completely lacked like urgency on offense. And like, that was like, I mean, Randall, like, we know, has like ball stopping tendencies. Like RJ, as well as he's playing right now, like, it sometimes comes to like the detriment of the flow of the offense. Not always. I think for the most part, he's been pretty good about attacking quickly and keeping stuff in rhythm. And when he's hitting shots, it all looks good. But sometimes it's a little bit like, all right, I gotta charge up for this drive here. And with Quickley, it's like, it's all fast decision-making. I mean, even like, I'll go to like a play where he didn't score. Like, he just had this like nasty hesitation move to split a double team between Ish Smith and Miles Plumlee, and probably got fouled at the rim, didn't get called. But to your point on Mitch, I mean, he had that drive where he was like a hesitation to beat Terry Rozier. He jumped with the big and then just kind of slipped it under his arm to Mitchell Robinson. And I would love just more stretches where the Knicks have four guys like Quickley out there. To me, that was the brilliance of their bench unit early in the year. That was what worked for them early in this game when they had that lineup of Quickley, Grimes, RJ, Obi, and Taj. It was that everyone was like playing with energy and making fast decisions. And I don't want to like beat the dead horse of like, oh, this all comes back to Randall. Like, he's stopping the ball. Because Julius, I don't even think really did that all that much time. Like, most of Julius's offense came within the flow of things. But in general, they just need like quicker decision makers and guys who are willing to just shed the ball fast. I mean, that's where we've complimented Julius the last few games. Even when he shot like crap, he's been content to just sort of be a hub and keep the ball moving and to beat his zone. I mean, it's penetration and now I'm a broken record, but it's that willingness to just say, hey, like either I'm going to go fast, and whether it's the right or wrong decision, I'm going to make a decision and I'm going to keep the defense like guessing and in motion.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And, you know, I think that, like you said, the energy that quickly plays with and the willingness, it seems like right now, to sort of prove himself as a initiator is very palpable. And I hope that the Knicks keep going, you know, keep going to him in that capacity and empowering him to do that, because I do really think we're starting to see him take sort of a leap as far as that's all concerned. And, you know, hopefully it seems like it just takes a mountain of injuries and, you know, whatever COVID absences to get quickly an opportunity to start, because I guess Tibbs just views him as a bench player. But, you know, Alec Burks can give you a lot of energy off the bench too, and quickly can give you a little more of what the starting lineup needs as of right this second. So I kind of hope they keep going with that. But Gavin, if let's see, maybe if Knicks fans wanted to bet the over on Quickly's assists next game, which maybe wouldn't be a bad bet, where should they go to do that?
There's only one place, Alex, and it's BetOnline, who would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action of 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And with that, we are back on Locked On Knicks, your favorite daily New York Knicks podcast. Third and final segment, Alex, I'll throw it to you. Where do you want to start off here? Was there any other element of this game that was intriguing or maybe encouraging for you?
Yeah, I think Obi was encouraging in the way that he played. But I'll save that for just in a minute. I first want to just say, like, the one thing about this game, I didn't really leave this one feeling like, ironically, I left this game feeling better than after the three game win streak that sort of started this hot stretch that the Knicks are on right now, where they were winning, but they were like barely beating like the depleted Pistons and stuff like that. Those games were just kind of making me go, ugh, like this game should have never been close. And, you know, they were facing a team that was like a glorified G League team. Like, why were they not blowing these guys out? You know, they're only winning by like 6-7 points, whatever. And it was like way too close down the stretch. This game, you know, it always felt like the Knicks were like one run away and they just kind of ran out of time. You know, they actually started kind of making a run at the end of the game and it was just too far into garbage time for that to really matter. But like, you know, the Hornets are an extremely potent offense. They're like one of the most potent offenses in the league and they hold them to 97 points. They wouldn't have even gotten that far if Miles Bridges hadn't had the game of his life. You know, shoots 14 of 20 overall, 5-9 from three, 38 points, 12 boards, 5 assists. I mean, just a nonsense game for him. And, you know, on top of that, like, it wasn't just like he was getting tons of open shots. He just was exhibiting just insane displays of shot making throughout this game. You know, making all these three-pointers over outstretched arms that it seemed like he should have had to make an adjustment for and yet got it off cleanly and was making every single one of them. It was just one of those games where, you know, and I know that it feels like this happens a lot against the Knicks this year, but this one felt more earned than some of the other ones that just felt like it happened because the Knicks kept leaving someone open. You know, Bridges just legitimately had like an out-of-body experience and had like the best game of his life. So I'm not too worried about this game. I think the Knicks offense, you know, they just look kind of sluggish. I mentioned it earlier in the show, but it was just kind of like the classic matinee game for them where it seems like they always come out sluggish. And, you know, I think the real test is going to be tomorrow. You know, tomorrow night you have to come back for another game. You should win that one. You know, you should try to go out there and come out with better energy, prove that today was the fluke and that you're not just back to your old tendencies from when you weren't playing as well earlier in the season. You know, keep yourself at or above 500, because that was such a key last year too. You know, just playing with pride to like stay above 500. Like the Knicks really, it seemed like every time that they either fell a game below or like matched 500 last year, they like really came out and busted their butt, make sure that they stayed above that line. And then eventually they rip off that winning streak, and that really helped them rise in the standings late in the season. So, I just in general just want to say like this game stunk, and we didn't really want to talk about the overall what happened in it because it wasn't fun to watch, but it also was not like the most discouraging thing to me in the world.
Yeah, so I think I'll push back on that a tiny bit because I was pretty disgusted with their defense for not the entirety of this game, but a lot of it. And like I think the 97 number is a little bit deceptive because the Hornets, like, I think they clearly took the foot off the pedal in the fourth quarter. They only got 11 points in the fourth. Also, no LaMelo Ball in this game. I mean, nominally, like, obviously Terry Rozier stepped up and was really good. You mentioned Bridges was obviously insane, but like the guy who's supposedly supposed to be the engine for them, and they still, for at least three quarters, like, ripped the Knicks pretty good. And then in regards to Miles Bridges, at least in the first quarter, I hated Randall's defense on him. It was mostly because Randall like wouldn't stay on him. Like he just got like extremely like lazy. Like anytime, maybe, like, and to be clear, and like I always give this qualifier, and I'll continue to give this qualifier. Like, we don't know what the scheme is. Like, maybe Tibbs told Julius, like, hey, anytime someone sets a screen on you, just switch off. We're fine with if Bridges wants to attack the rim over and over again, like let him. Like, Mitch will be there to block his shots. So maybe that was the case. And in that case, it's not on Julius, but it felt like Rozier would set, like, at least from afar, looking at my TV screen from my couch, what looked like soft screens, and Randall would just say, all right, Evans probably got him. And then Fournier would just get torched by him. And then, I mean, there's another play, and this was, again, what we've seen a million times this year, where Julius just jogs back in transition. So Fournier is like, all right, someone better guard Bridges. I'm going to guard him. And then it looks like Fournier plays crap defense, but it's not really his fault. Like, he's just in a complete mismatch. And for the vast majority of the game, like, I noticed a lot in the first quarter and a lot of the third quarter, and I didn't really know who to blame for this, but the Hornets got so many open threes because the Knicks would just aggressively, it was a balance between aggressively overhelping and like needing to help because the pick and roll coverage was so bad. And it was RJ Barrett in particular over and over again. He would just drift into the lane almost automatically because he assumed, like, whether it was Julius or another big, that like they would just get blown up in the pick and roll and a guard would have a wide open lane. And in the first quarter, it looked more like, I'm like, all right, RJ, you got to stay a little bit closer to the shooter. And then as the game went on, I'm like, all right, well, he's either giving up a layup or an open three. Like, it was an impossible dilemma. So I personally didn't love the defense in this one. But Alex, I don't know if you want to respond to that or if you want to maybe wrap this up on a more positive note. We could both agree that Obi Toppin was pretty awesome in this game.
It was Obi. You know, we were talking. I agree with what you said. You know, it definitely, it wasn't the best. I thought the Knicks, I'll just say, I thought that they locked in a little better in the second half, but it was already like kind of too late at that point, unfortunately. You know, you just reached that point where like Bridges did not cool down, and there you go. You know, that was pretty much the game right there. I thought they did a better job of defending him in the second half though, and stuck with him a little better. But of course, yeah, like to your point, I don't think the defense was great early on, and that led to him getting his opportunities to really get going. Also, the boxing out in the first half was not great either. Like, they need to just do box out drills at practice, like, all day for, you know, not tomorrow, obviously, because they're not going to practice. But next time they have a few days off, just do, like, box out drills for, like, 5 hours and make sure that they're keeping a butt on somebody at all times, because that was not a great effort in this one. Losing rebounds to the Hornets, or there was a couple times, there was, like, two or three possessions in a row where the Knicks just didn't have good enough positioning and then were kind of scrambling to get a rebound and then had a bounce off them and possession go back to Charlotte, effectively like giving them an offensive rebound, which is not great either. So, let's finish up on Obi, because obviously he was great. I really liked what we saw out of him, especially because it's been pretty rough lately. You know, I had Jeff Rasmussen on, you know, yesterday. We talked about Obi a bit and, you know, about how he's been looking lately and how it's been kind of like, you know, like you always want to go to bat for Obi, but you had a hard time, you know, saying the Tibbs was not justified in giving him a sort of a quick hook recently, because like Obi just really was not playing super well. And you could tell that he knew he wasn't playing well either, because he always looked frustrated going to the bench, but also sort of accepting of the fact that he was getting taken out of games. This game, I thought that he came out right away and just played with fantastic energy. Ends up with 11 points, 6 boards, 5 of 8 shooting. He made a corner three. I think it might have been his first basket, maybe his second one. I forget. But, you know, makes a three. Also, you know, making great backdoor cuts for lobs, you know, like I already mentioned with Quickly, you know, having a really great chemistry with him in this game. I thought that he played a really good game, you know, played good on defense as well in general, and just kind of brought the effort that we needed to see out of him. I do kind of wish that the Knicks had tried, you know, kind of going small with him and Randall in this game. They didn't go for that at all, I don't think. I think that they just straight up spelled each other. So it would have been nice to see a little bit of that, because Charlotte never went super small, but there were some opportunities where I think that if the Knicks would have embraced sort of getting into a running mindset, that it would have really helped with how Obi was playing in this game. But I guess you take what you can get. You know, I was just glad to see him sort of get back on track and start looking like himself again. And, you know, as you noted before we started recording, it could have also been, you know, maybe he was having trouble sort of recovering from COVID. And if it was that, I hope that, you know, he's fully back on track and like ready to rock now.
Yeah. I mean, he just looked like a different guy, right? Like he looked like he was just like missing the energy that makes him Obi the last six or seven games. And it was hard to tell if that was just his confidence being down the drain or if it was like him, like just still like being sick. Like, I mean, totally anecdotal, but like I had COVID like 3 weeks ago and I felt fine like a week after. And I tried like working out and stuff, and I just felt like drained and exhausted. And I was like kind of like depressed the next few days. And I was like talking to my dad about it. He's like, yeah, you know, your body's probably just like shot from like having it, even if it was like a very minor case. And I think sometimes like when these guys are coming back, like even like RJ before he went on this run, his first three games post COVID were pretty bad. And like, obviously like not to get in a whole rant about the virus, but like we know like it affects everyone differently. Like even when someone's like young and in good shape, like Obi. So it's just like, we don't know. So it's hard to just put it on that, but like, he just looked like he was like finally like healthy. Like he was almost like he was like playing sick because he just was not the same guy. But all that being said, I'm in total agreement with you. And again, it was the same thing as IQ. It was just like decisiveness for him, whether it was running the floor or like the multiple times, like he attacked the closeout, like when he just burst it by Plumlee and got to the rim and drew a foul, or when he had that up and under at the rim. That's his greatest tool right now is when he can be decisive and sort of surprise a defender. And once he's at the basket, like it's too late. Like it doesn't really matter if he's a great ball handler at that point, like he's going to either finish or he's going to get free throws. So, I was with you. As far as other guys, like final notes, I'm going up and down. I will note that RJ, good game again, not quite what he's been doing of late. The six turnovers stand out in a negative way, but 18 points, five assists. And again, even though they're mostly on defense, I love that he got 12 boards. Like that's someone who I think is finding some confidence and is basically like so many times over the last 2 years, and especially this season, I feel like RJ's fortunes sort of like rise and fall with the team, or like rise and fall with how well he's shooting. It would probably be the better way to frame it. And in this game, like he did everything he could, even though it wasn't like and I, when I say perfect night, I mean like the kind of nights he's been having lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really have too much more to add, to be honest, Gavin. I think you tied it up with a bow. I mean, I'm just ready to move on to the next game. I hope that the second game of the back to back here is better. I actually didn't look up who they're playing for this next game, unfortunately. I should have probably looked that up before we started going here. But, I hope that the second game of the back-to-back goes a lot better against the Timberwolves. I think that's a team that the Knicks should hopefully be able to beat. And then obviously have the Pelicans and the Clippers, this stretch that we had sort of highlighted, you know, like a week ago as being really key for them. This is the one game so far that has been kind of a stinker, but had three really good games before this, hopefully three really good games after this, and they can sort of go charging in to the back stretch of the season. But that's it for this episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you all for listening. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow with another game recap and some more good episodes this week. We're going to start getting into a little bit of trade deadline talk soon. Maybe if you look to the second segment of this episode, you might find a little inspiration for what our first target might be as far as discussing potential trades for the Knicks in a post-Cam Reddish world. So we're going to be getting into that soon. But until next time, thank you all for listening. Peace out. We will talk to you all soon.